So our scripture reading for this morning is from the 17th chapter of John's Gospel, as Georgia just referred to. And this is part of the prayer that Jesus prays in the Garden of Gethsemane. I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one, as we are one. I in them, and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you. And these know that you have sent me. I made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them. As George had mentioned, on the logo, the United Church of Christ logo, which I think we have, no, we don't have on the front of the bulletin, but it's in the bulletin somewhere, is a symbol that was adopted in, I believe, in 1957 when the denomination was formed. And I know some of you were around at that time in 1957. It's always easy for me to remember the foundation year of the United Church of Christ because it was the same year I was born. So I'm about 2 months younger than the UCC. But there was a lot that happened prior to that merger in 1957. Now, to give you a really, really quick thumbnail of what was going on, in the 1930s, the Congregational churches merged with a grouping of churches known as the Christian Church. They were similar to the Disciples of Christ, not completely, but they were a separate group. So that's why some of you who can remember back to the 1940s, remember that it was called Congregational Christian? Do you remember that, any of you? Yeah, okay. Well, that's where that was from. It was from that merger of those two groups. Meanwhile, around the same time, two denominations, the Evangelical Church and the Reformed Church, merged to form the Evangelical Reformed Church. Now, both of those denominations were historically German, and they were strongest in Pennsylvania and in the Midwest and some northern parts of the South. And their polity, their way of doing things, was just a little bit different than the congregational churches. They had kind of a Presbyterian model where the local church didn't make all of its own decisions. Now, that may not sound like a big deal, but it was. So in the mid to late 1940s, there started to be talks about merging the ENR and the Congregational Christian. And I learned about this totally by accident in my first church in Vermont, where they had saved, interestingly enough, all the pamphlets that had become part of a pamphlet war. And what was going on is that the Congregational Christian churches were afraid that if the merger took place with the Evangelical and Reformed Church, that congregations would lose their autonomy. So there was this pamphlet war. This is one of those, before the internet, of course, and these groups would get together and write this pamphlet. They'd mail them to every single congregational church, and this went on for at least a couple years. Well, it didn't happen in 1948, but eventually did happen in 1957. And occasionally, not so much recently, but in the last 30 years or so, there were still rumblings. whenever, it's not really true up here. There are no former ENR churches up here, but there are many out in the Midwest and a lot in Pennsylvania. You can often tell by the style of worship, by the fact that there are German gravestones in the cemetery and things like that. You can tell almost immediately which one was in ENR church as opposed to congregational. And there are some towns in which, in the Midwest, where you'll have two UCC churches. One was congregational and one was ENR. And you'll still see that. And they don't really talk to each other. At least they didn't. Now they, you know, and you're starting to see mergers. We're far enough away now from that so that those historic differences aren't as important. But for a long time, there actually would have been a bit of animosity between churches like that. So, anyway, that's just a quickie thumbnail of what happened with the UCC. And it's important for us to know that. Because it's where we come from. And my colleagues who grew up in the ENR tradition are mystified why it is that the UCC churches in New England, for the most part, still keep the word congregational in their name. Well, when the ENR merged with the Congregational Christian Churches, we all changed our name to St. John's United Church of Christ. How come you're still the whatever congregational church? So here's that, again, that little tension that you will see. It's a reminder how difficult it can be to really be one with all the things that divide us. Yet being one is what Jesus was very interested in this prayer, knowing what is going to happen the next day. And the thing that's kind of difficult about John is that in John, Jesus speaks in rather mystical terms. And we get these sentences, like a couple of sentences in this passage that I just read today. If you think they're twisted in English, they're even worse in Greek. Where I am in you, and you are in me, and you love me, and I love them, and that sort of thing. It's kind of confusing. And as we find Jesus praying, and he prays several times during this prayer that the church be one, he doesn't ask that specific things happen. He doesn't do this anywhere else in the Gospels. To talk about what it is the church, how the church should be structured. And he doesn't really talk very much about what it means to be one, other than he wants us to be one in the same way that he and God are one. Well, that's a mystery we'll never comprehend. And we should take a cue from this, that when Jesus is talking to us about, and talking to God, and of course, by extension to us, that when he tells us that we are to be one, it's not meant to be an intellectual exercise. In other words, it's not something we just sit and think about. We do it. We live it out. So we don't have an idea of what Jesus envisioned the church to be. We do have an idea what he wanted the church to do. To model unity for the world, to model justice, to model inclusivity, and to model love. But he leaves the details of how that's going to happen up to us. And it didn't take long for the Christian church to get split. I mean, the divisions in the church, probably, if you want to really look back far enough, you can see in the disagreements between the disciples. And it wasn't long after Jesus' time that the church became split over the question of whether people had to become Jews before they became Christians. And that's pretty important because probably all of us would not be here unless you were originally Jewish in background. Jesus really started a movement. He didn't really start the church, which is not to say that it was by accident. And I want to drop a bombshell, but it's a carefully planned bombshell. Okay? So stick with me. It's really important to recognize that in this prayer, Jesus is not praying for the church. Hold on. He's not praying for the church. He is praying for his disciples. He's not praying for the church as an institution. He's praying for his disciples. And there's another cue that we can take. It is very easy for churches, and all churches are susceptible to this, to think that the way that they do things is the best way. And there are plenty of churches that will tell you just that. That the way we do things is the best. And if you don't believe the way that we do, well, then God doesn't like you. This is not to say that Jesus was not and is not interested in the church. Of course he is. But it's important for us not to get hung up on the church as an institution. Institutions are by nature conservative. They tend towards self-preservation. The people that Jesus is praying for, he's praying for us. He's praying for us as his disciples. And praying for his church, which of course now is very deeply divided. And we know that. I know that not all of you certainly grew up in the congregational tradition. My guess is that, I know we've got some that were Methodist, is that right? Some that grew up in Methodist, Baptist, number that are Roman Catholic, some that came from some evangelical denominations. So we've got quite a broad spread. So in a sense, we're kind of modeling what it is to be one. Coming from different backgrounds, but finding something in common here. But, as I said a moment ago, it's not in the church, it's not an intellectual game to figure out what it is to be one. What we are called to do is to be one, to live that out. And that's how we can understand it. And when we are called to be one, we are called to be in relationship with one another. And relationship is dynamic. It's not a static thing. It's not something you do and then you're done with it and then that's it. And in the Christian tradition, when we think about our relationship with God and our relationship with one another, we use the word covenant. Covenant. A covenant's a legal word. You know, sometimes if you buy a piece of property and there is a covenant with a deed that you can't do such and such with the property, a covenant legally is just a contract. It's an agreement that two parties or more make about something. Every time I perform a wedding, I'm officiating at the sealing of a contract legally. But we know that marriage is certainly much more than just making a contract with another person. It's making a covenant. That's how we see it. And that covenant is not just between the two people. It is a three-way covenant with God as the third party. Jesus calls us to be one, to live out what it is to be one. Not to overthink it, but to do it. We can give thanks for the model that our denomination has given us of how groups that had some significant differences were able to merge together and to work together to become what our denomination is now. And it's still in progress, we know that. So here we are. We are called to be one. To live out that oneness that Jesus describes in such mystical terms, describing the oneness that he wants us to have as the same as the oneness that he and God have. That's a tall order to think about, isn't it? But it's what we're called to do. And to remember that we're not going to get it right all the time, because the church is always in progress. It's never perfect. We're always learning. We're always working together. We make mistakes. We learn from them, and we continue to pray for God's guidance in what we do. So being one. And we need to do this in the light of a world that does not understand what it is to be one with others. The recent shooting in Virginia is a really tough reminder of that. That many in our society and many in the world do not understand the importance of being one. Instead, division is the way to take out one's frustrations. And in this particular case, in a deadly and a totally random way. Friends, what we have to offer as the church is a model for what it is to be one, to be able to live and to work together despite differences. Because we're all not going to agree on everything, are we? I mean, it's just not going to happen. But we still practice being one. And we can extend that beyond the church. I'll close with a quick reminder about something that we're seeing in Africa. And that is that when there have been terrorist attacks, some of the terrorist groups that are active in Africa are equal opportunity killers. They will bomb mosques. They will bomb and shoot up churches. It doesn't matter. And in a number of places in Africa, and especially in West Africa, what we're seeing is in communities is this phenomenon where on Friday afternoons, Christians will stand around a mosque while their Muslim friends and neighbors are in prayer. And on Sunday morning, their Muslim neighbors will be standing around a church while their Christian brothers and sisters are worshiping and praying. Friends, this is not a small thing, and we can learn from this. You don't have to see everything eye to eye. We don't have to agree on everything, but we can be one in understanding the value of each other. So that's a lot for one day. But this is what Jesus calls us to do. To be one as God is one. Amen.